Our next speaker is Dr. Kendall DeYoung from USDA ARS in Fort Collins. Welcome.
Thanks, Ray. I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Huihui Zhang, who's also here. What we'll be talking about today is canopy temperature and image-based irrigation scheduling. And the title has proof of concept. That might have been a little ambitious. This will be more of a concept. This is the first year that we've really been doing this. And a lot of sensors are still in the field right now and probably be taking those out on Thursday and Friday. But you'll kind of get the idea of what we're trying to do, and I would appreciate any suggestions people would have. This is an aerial view of our farm. It's a limited irrigation research farm. It's north of Greeley, Colorado, north central Colorado Front Range. The whole farm is about 50 acres, and we have varying levels of deficit irrigation management, and so you can see some of the treatment differences here in this plot. The plot here in this section is where we're going to be talking about this experiment, where we're trying to look at how we can use canopy temperature and canopy imaging to determine ET. So the overall objective of what we're trying to do is really looking at very simple yet accurate methods to quantify ET, especially under limited water, when you're under drought stress or water stress, so that we can use that for irrigation scheduling. We do that using crop coefficient methods, again, we're trying to do that under non-stress conditions and stress conditions using basal crop coefficient, dual crop coefficient methods, and also using remotely sensed data. That's kind of the long-term plan of what we're trying to do. So here you have an example of what you would see in a full and a limited irrigation system. So you have the full irrigation on the left with a very tall, full canopy, maximizing your leaf area index. And then under limited irrigation, you have a smaller crop, shorter crop, less leaf area, and you also see the wilting that happens during the heat of the day. And so what happens with that wilting is the stomata will close, your transpiration slows down with the crop, and it actually gets warmer. And so the idea, the basis of what we're trying to do here, if we're looking at our crop ET, this is the dual crop coefficient equation where we can estimate a reference ET using weather station data, which we have on site. We can estimate KCB, which is our basal crop coefficient, based off of canopy cover, which you can get from imaging. You can estimate the stress coefficient or reduction in transpiration based on canopy temperature. And the surface evaporation we can get from a water balance. And it's a small portion of the ET. It is significant, but that's something that's fairly easy to model or to estimate. Here's an image of our CoAgMet weather station. This is a network of about 80 or so weather networks around the state of Colorado. So we have one on site. It's on a well-irrigated grass. We use the alfalfa reference to determine our crop ET because that is the standard in the state of Colorado. Here's an example of our daily water balance spreadsheet that we use. This is a spreadsheet model that we've been using in our other irrigation experiments for almost 10 years now. It's a daily time step model. And again, this is based on the dual crop coefficient method where you have a reference ET, you have a basal crop coefficient that estimates your transpiration based on canopy cover, and we measure canopy cover throughout the season. In the traditional sense of this model, we use soil water balance to determine KS and any reductions in ET. And so this is what you really see on the top is your soil water balance model. There's a lot of things going on here. I understand it's kind of difficult to look at, but the bottom line is this green line that you see going back and forth, that's your soil water deficit. In other words, the amount of water it would take to bring back to field capacity. These points that you see are observations. So we have neutron probe measurement tubes in each of our plots, and we take measurements typically once a week, often before irrigation, so we kind of shoot for the peak. And you can see that we do pretty well during most of the season. You get off a little bit sometimes, but the model does pretty well. The idea behind what we're trying to do with this irrigation scheduling concept is very much the same, except we're using canopy temperature to model KS. So, for example, crop water stress index is scaled from 0 to 1. If you take 1 minus a crop water stress index, that's been used and published in many studies in the past as a surrogate for KS. We're also using alternative water stress indices, such as DANS and DACT, which I'll explain a little bit more about, also to convert that into a KS. And so once you get your water outside of the readily available water, typically with these measurements, they also indicate that you have stress and a reduction in ET. And as you can see, here's an example of what we had this year. It does a pretty good job. Now, we got a little bit off on the end, and part of this might be the method that we're using. It needs a little bit of tweaking. Part of it is just error that we often get with the soil water balance model. And again, this is not proof of concept. This is concept of concepts. So the irrigation treatments that we used in the study, or at least what we're starting out with, is a high irrigation level. So we will trigger an irrigation when KS is less than 0.9. So really it doesn't take a lot of stress. I mean, you might even get just a little bit of noise on a well-irrigated plot that will trigger an irrigation. We irrigate once a week, and when it triggers that, we'll irrigate it back to field capacity. The low irrigation treatment will trigger an irrigation when KS is less than 0.6, and we'll fill it to half of the readily available water in the root zone. So, in other words, probably half of what that line is. So if we look at what we're measuring our basal crop coefficient with, okay, we're looking at canopy cover. And this is where anybody that has their eyes closed and snoozing a little bit, okay, wake up, there's about to be a video. So we have fully irrigated and deficit irrigated crop, okay? We're taking images. I think that these are on 15-minute time scales. And so really what happens with your fully irrigated, you have these happy plants, and they really stay out and they stay happy. The deficit irrigated, you can see, well, there goes my, I'm going to back this up and do it again because it didn't run both of them at the same time. But watch the deficit irrigated. See how it wilts up? Okay, so you're losing canopy during the day. What that means is that if you're measuring canopy cover during the midday, that's really not representative of the full canopy cover, okay? If you look at the definition of KCB, the basal crop coefficient, if you go back in FAO 56 and all those documents, the definition is for a plant that is well-watered, non-stressed, okay? So if that crop wilts up during the day, that's not representative of your basal crop coefficient. That's representative of your KCB times your KS. So on a fully irrigated plot, okay, you have some pretty good consistency here most days because it doesn't wilt. Okay, you get a little bit of scatter, and part of that's image processing, and part of that could be wind and other things, but it's pretty consistent throughout the day. With the deficit irrigated, first of all, you have a smaller KCB or a lower KCB because we had stress on this prior, so you actually do have less canopy. Okay, so your KCB should be lower, but during the day, you also have this interaction with KS because of the stress, that reduction in stress. Okay, so we're using KCB to estimate the potential transpiration for that day. Consequently, we need to take measurements very early in the day before we see this drop. Okay, so this is about 9-10 a.m. is when we often start seeing that drop off. So a lot of the images that we're trying to take, we try to take right after dawn, basically. Because that's the first time we can take it in the light before we get that drop off. Now, we did get some nighttime pictures with these cameras, and these are trail cameras that you know you use to scout your deer or whatever else, but they're not made for scientific research, and so we've struggled to get something that works well for what we wanted to do. But you kind of get the idea. So these are examples of the seasonal change in canopy cover that we got with our treatments, and again, we have what's meant to be well-watered and what's meant to be deficit irrigated, okay? So we have a little bit of a range here. We'd like to get a little bit more of a spread, but you see there's scatter from day to day, and I'll talk a little bit more about why that is. If we look at a specific set of plots, sometimes we get cameras that malfunction, all right? That's the reality of doing research. And so what do you do there? Do you just leave it out? Do you interpolate? How do you treat that? Sometimes here you get a real big drop and or spikes in your data. And really what that is bright or direct lighting. So if we look at these two plots, this is actually the same plot one day apart. And it's really hard to see with the naked eye what the difference is in those plots. I mean, it really, you look at it, it's negligible. But if we use the same program to process the two of these, we get 89% in one and 80% in the other. And the way this works is you take the image and you select a range of green pixels. Okay, anything within one range or the other, that's what your canopy cover is. So we have 89% in one and 80% in the other. And really the difference was in lighting, okay? You get a lot more lighting here. So, for example, if we look at these leaves in the background here, it kind of picks them up in the first day, but the second day you get a lot more shadowing, and so you're really not picking up any very much of that. Even look at the tassels. See how this tassel is whited out, okay? On the other end of the scale, white is not considered canopy because it's not green, so it doesn't select that as part of the canopy. So really, day-to-day lighting can be an issue, and that's one of the challenges that we have in this, because if you're trying to do it at first light, that's when you get the biggest changes in light, too. You also get issues where you might have foggy days. The bottom here is a foggy or rainy day. I think this one, if I remember right, is the time scale right before sunrise, so you're getting a little bit of ambient light. But again, there's... This is the same day. You can see that these are basically the same images. So you get a lot of variation in it if the lighting conditions aren't right. So that makes a huge difference. And that could be one of the drawbacks. I mean, that's something that we're trying to figure out. We run a 5-day moving average to kind of smooth things out, and that kind of helps identify where we're at. And you can see that once we get to full canopy, it really stays pretty similar throughout that time. Now looking at infrared temperature, canopy temperature. Again, your plot on the left is fully irrigated. So you're going to have a diurnal curve that's really cool. On the right, you have a limited irrigation crop. So those plots are going to spread out during the midday. And one of them is going to be hotter than the other. Now, during the nighttime, they really stay about the same. But during the day, they really spread out. So one of the classic methods to look at this is crop water stress index. So they use a function of air temperature, vapor pressure deficit, and some baselines that are determined. And so it requires a little bit of extra equipment besides the IRT, but this is really kind of the gold standard of how to use canopy temperature data to determine stress. We've been looking at other stress indices that don't require that extra information, such as degrees above non-stressed. And the idea is, if you have a non-stress baseline, a very well-watered crop, okay, and that's as well-watered as you can get, if you compare another crop that's presumably the same hybrid and planted the same day and all that, if it's been stressed, it has a higher temperature, that difference between that temperature can really give you an idea of a proxy for what the stress could be. Time temperature threshold is a method that's been published quite a bit by Susan O'Shaughnessy and other researchers in Bushland. Based off of that idea, which is there's a threshold temperature, the amount of time above that temperature is meaningful. So if you're above a threshold temperature for a long amount of time, then that can indicate how much stress you have. Similarly, this idea for degrees above critical temperature, okay, the magnitude above that threshold, okay, that can be meaningful as well. So we're looking at these alternatives. What the advantage is here above crop water stress index is that this doesn't require air temperature. This doesn't require advanced calculation. It just requires a canopy temperature. It's not as robust, yes, absolutely, but it still can be meaningful. Emily Kohlberg published a paper a couple of years ago, I guess last year, where they used these new indices and converted them to crop coefficients, converted them to a KS. And so again, what we're doing is taking canopy temperature and we're relating that back to a stress crop coefficient. We've been using Apogee IRTs for most of our data collection for a lot of years, and I guess I will say that this is not an endorsement or an unendorsement of anybody, but we've gotten good data from that. Dynamax also makes IRTs, and they have some interfaces that are very interesting and might be practical for you. So we started to use those as well. So we're actually double replicated in these plots with two different types of IRTs, and they track very well. We had to correct some, and we're still learning how to use them and everything. But and this is just a point, especially to anybody younger in here, make sure you always look at your data, okay, before you process it, because day to day you get some funky things happening. You don't notice it unless you look at it, and I think too many people learn that lesson the hard way. But they really have tracked together really well, and so we really feel like both are a pretty solid product. As far as thermal imaging, there have been a lot of talks today about thermal imaging and some of the options out there. We've had a high-boy tractor where we would drive it through all the plots and take nadir images from above with a high-resolution thermal camera and many other sensors. Now we have UAVs. Okay, this was a UAV before UAVs were UAVs. These images were taken with the tractor, and this is corn from above, and it's very difficult to tell what it is. It looks like a kaleidoscope. But in your full irrigation, you really have just a large variation of shaded and unshaded leaves, and so that's why you're seeing that difference. In a limited irrigation plot, you're seeing a lot more background, and it's a lot warmer. You can even see some of the drip lines that we run with on the bottom here. But the difference is here is with the fully irrigated, we have a nice, almost normal distribution that we can look at and learn from. With the limited irrigation, you're really combining two distributions where part of it's your canopy and part of it's your background, and we really don't care what the background is. We want to know what the canopy is. So we have been working on methods to statistically separate those and analyze if they're meaningful, and through these methods we have found that they can be related to water stress. So moving forward, we might not necessarily just be using IRTs, but we might be using imaging, and through some of these methods be able to separate those. These are some of the tools that are being used now and or we envision being used in the future. You're looking at UAVs. Here's a farmer in the field taking an image of a field with a smartphone. Okay, that's not something that you saw 10, 15 years ago. I mean, my dad farms. He still doesn't have a smartphone. But it's becoming very common. And they're looking for applications that are helpful to them, that are meaningful to them. I think a big note is that they have to be simple and they have to be accurate. If they don't work, people aren't going to use them. And so that's very important to kind of get it right before they go onto the market. But through this concept, it presumably could be something that a farmer could use. The networks of weather stations are pretty robust anymore, and so you can have your reference ET. Through flying drones, I personally believe that agronomists in the future are going to be hiring people to fly things so that you can collect data, and you can do things like very simple, like detecting leaks for subsurface irrigation. Things like that are pretty easy to do. Some of these other things that are neat, being able to process some of these. FLIR systems, FLIR, has a cell phone add-on. Okay, it plugs right into your cell phone and turns your phone into an IR camera. It costs about $300, $400. You can stick it in your pocket. Okay, those are the sorts of things that are very practical to use. One thing that Dynamax has right now is an interface where you can connect to your system of sensors with your cell phone, and it can give you real-time data, real-time information, and you can look it up on your phone, and it graphs it for you. These are the types of tools that are really neat, that when you can put them in the hands of a farmer, if we can integrate them so that it's something that's simple to use and it works, I think people are really going to use it. So that's really the idea behind all this concept, is if we can figure out how to put all these pieces together and make sure that it can be accurate, then it could be a tool that gets used for irrigation in the future. So what's next for us? We're really trying to verify this concept. This was our first year. We didn't even have anything replicated. We just wanted to get sensors in the field to get an idea, get a feel for the challenges, and there were plenty. One of them right now is our staffing. It takes a lot of people to put up all these sensors, and like I said, they're still in the field. I'll probably be pulling them out on Friday. So, you know, trying to get all that out there. You know, we're going to work on trying to get more replicates out there. We might put soil water content sensors in there in tandem to see how that works. We do have Neutron probes out there, but again, if we're trying to replicate and demonstrate something that a farmer would use, that's something that could be possible. Data assimilation, okay, if we get off of that soil water curve, can we bring it back to where it was and start from there? We'll be adding in UAVs and using that in the future, and maybe even looking at spatially how it can change. Because with imaging, I mean, the sky's the limit, really. So with that, I thank you. And I do want to give special thanks to Liam Cummins, Tyler Gilkerson, and Michelle Andreka. They are technicians and students who have worked for our unit, some of them for several years, and have done a fantastic job keeping all of this going and really have helped us learn a lot about it. And so we appreciate their dedication and hard work. And with that, I'll take any questions you might have. I'd be happy to talk afterwards, too. So,
is there any potential, I thought about this when I saw your pictures, of actually just using a canopy picture, watching when we have a big shrink intermittent, and using that to come up with an alternative KS calculation?
So just a canopy under stress, and that's it?
Except, well, watching for the change, sort of like the time of day at which that occurs. Presumably when we're sort of unfurled at the beginning of the day,
yeah.
At some point we're going to furl, and looking at the time of the day in which that is occurring to measure the difference between stressed and unstressed.
So just noting that time where you get that divergence.
Exactly.
It really is a factor of environment. If you're in a semi-arid area like we are, I mean, that's going to happen a lot earlier than, say, in a humid area where, you know, you don't get as much potential, and it really can change from day to day. I think the key in what we're trying to do is if you can collect that canopy temperature prior to that, that gives you your potential. And that shrinkage has a change that goes throughout the day. And part of what we're trying to understand here, too, is there a certain time of day where we have to get a snapshot, or can we take a snapshot at any time, or do we have to get the whole thing? Because each of those have challenges and limitations. I mean, it would be great eventually if you could get everything worked out so a farmer could just take a snapshot and then it gives you something that, you know, that you can learn from. But we have to figure out how to integrate all these things first. Does that answer your question? Kind of. If you want to talk about it later, I'd be happy to.
Okay. Thank you again, Kendall.